Alrighty, folks. It is that time of the week again. So pour a fresh cold one, take a seat, and listen to Kayak Fishing Radio Mid-Atlantic. I am your host, Mark Delaney Crew Wheeler. And, folks, this is the opening week of pepper season in the Chesapeake Bay. It's a great time for me. I love this time of the year. It gets colder. I'm not sweating my butt off every day and every night. We've got a lot of fish feeding this time of year also in the Mid-Atlantic area. In caves and schools, and it just gets, you know, hot and heavy. And that's the way I like it. So we're going to talk about stripers tonight. And how to fish for them in more ways than you could think, i.e., you know, from the surf and from the pier, because, folks, you know, we're all former surf or pier fishermen at one point, and, you know, that's some fun stuff there, but mostly, you know, we're going to talk about the kayak side, you know, and specifically the Virginia area, North Carolina, but mostly Virginia. I know up in Maryland and everywhere else, you know, bunker schools are the key this time of year. And down in North Carolina and in other reaches, it's if you can find them right now. Slow part of the season, but it'll be getting better. All right. We've got a good group in the chat room. We have Hammerhead, Greg Crisp, Mr. LGB, JC, and the ever-popular Kayak Kevin. What's going on, guys? So let's start off with the beginning of the season. We're talking about the fall season. We're going to go over the regulations right now for stripers in Virginia for the fall season. Okay, in Virginia coastal waters, i.e., Atlantic Ocean and its tributaries, minimum size is 28 inches, folks, and you can keep two per person per day. Okay, and that's just in the ocean. Now let's talk about in the bay itself, i.e., from tip of Fisherman's Island to Cape Henry Light or Port Story Light, Cape Henry Light, excuse me. That's the boundary to the bay. Anywhere inside there, folks, you're looking at 18 inches to 22 inches, that or 28 inches, that's the slot. Okay? You keep two per person, one fish at the two fish position limit, maybe 34 inches or larger. So that means you can catch a 22-inch striper, and then you catch a 36, you can keep that 36. You catch a 34, you can keep that 34. You catch a 33.5, you cannot keep it. You have to put it back. That's a breeder. We'd like to keep those in the population, okay? So, like I said, keep two per person, all right? That's a perfect amount. If you need any more than two, then there's something wrong with you, or you need to become a commercial fisherman. All right. Let's see here. Let's start with daytime fishing for stripers, you know, in baits and tackle and everything else. I've kind of jumped in the hoagie bandwagon recently. If you don't know what these baits are, Kaya Kevin is helping me with my description here of where the bait starts. It's from light to light, Cape Charles light to Cape Henry light. So that just quelled any, you know, well, what is he talking about? There it is, straight from the horse's mouth. All right. So the hoagies, these are a great bait. Really, you got to go online, take a look at the stuff, get tinkle in your hand, put out in the water, and fish with it. I've done it several different ways recently, and they've all worked. But definitely check out the hoagies. But listen, I'm trying to talk by myself. It's kind of hard, difficult, folks. Remember, you can always call in. The number is 714-816-4727. Try to preserve the day, folks. There's two main ways of doing it. Either A, plugging away, i.e. With the plastics and plugs, divers, your poppers, stuff like that. Or live bait, chunking. Up north, clams are used a lot. Bunker chunks are used a lot. Live bait with porgies, with bunker. Eels, not so much just yet. We're going to get to that point. But, simple things that they're feeding on. Crabs, stuff like that. Okay? So, what you're looking to use is a stout rod. We're not talking like offshore rod here, folks. We're talking simple gear. And the cheapest and easiest one is a medium heavy 6.5-7 foot ugly stick from Walmart. Put a good spinning reel or bait casting reel on it, depending on the rod. Spool it up with some mono if you're in open water. Braid if you're in cover, like along the many of the bay, the bridges and stuff like that, and rocks. Preferably braid, folks. Reason I said mono was that a lot of people like to use mono on stripers, especially up north. The reason for that, when they're live baiting, is that fish is going to take that bait, and that striper is going to take off. Usually he's caught that bait, right, and he's taken off with it. He's had to chase it down, and he's going to keep on going. He broke away from the school. 9 times out of 10, the stripers you're going to catch are schooled up. They're going to come up, they're going to smack it, and they're going to take off. With a mono line, it's going to give it some stretch. It's going to give you some time to see the hit, reach over, pick it up, and set the hook. Okay? Problem with that is to really get to where the stripers are and where they really like to feed, it's a lot of rock. Structure. Stripers like structure. They don't like being in open water, since they're easily eaten by many other species, i.e. big bluefish. We're talking schoolies here. Sharks, dolphins, I'm thinking of another thing that would eat a striper right about now, time of year. Birds, they play big pelicans and stuff like that. They like to stay in schools, they like to stay in structure. Plus, it helps them to feed, upwellings and eddies and stuff like that. So, that's what the stripers are doing. So, you can use, cut bait, live bait, over a structured piece. Rocks, obstruction of some kind, a wreck, floating a piece of bait, flying lined out, is my personal favorite. I don't like using weight. I don't like surface this time of year. But if you anchor up and you've got a piece of structure that you can, good current, you can, let some line out and let that chunk. A couple of blood worms hooked up, or a bunker chunk, a live spot for down here in Virginia, a small little live spot will go a long way. Clip the fins on the spot. It'll make them really appealing. That's close to where the structure might be. Slow it down a little bit. What you're looking to do is for that bait, for that fish to be sitting, his nose against the structure, the current is in his face going over top of him, and he's looking up, okay? What he's looking for is something to float over top or come over top of him that he can eat, right? So when you fly line that bait down, it's sinking slowly, and it's coming up across him, and he can see it. Here it comes. It's right on top of me. Boom, he's going to hit it. That's why I don't like or on the surface and float it across. There's no real reason. And it just changes the profile, and I don't really like that. Plus, a lot of times, those fish are going to come up, smack it, and that little bit of slack line from when that float pops off or slides, so when I can really get a good solid hook set into them, either I've gut hooked the fish really bad, or I've lost them completely. But when you fly line them, you've always got the line in your hand. You just kind of slowly feed it out. And as that bait's going over top, I learned this from my grandfather. Comes over top of his head, comes up, he's going to smack it. Because he does, he wants to get back in that cover. You're going to feel the hit. You can reel down, set the hook if you're using a J-hook. This is the only time of the year I use J-hooks is when I'm fly lining a bait. Because I want a quick hook set. Now, because of the quick hook set. But I get them hooked 9 times out of 10 right on top of the head. They're coming up, they're eating it, they're heading back down, and that line is falling right across their back. So when I set the hook, it hits them right on top. From right there, I can pull them out of the structure. They're not going to fight you in the structure like tog will, like a sheep's head might, or think grouper. You hook a grouper or an amberjack, where are they going? Straight to the structure, right? Stripers don't have as much power as other species might. That's how I live bait this time of year. A lot of chumming. I do a lot of chumming, especially if I'm clamming. Clamming is more of a Long Island kind of vine that works really well down here. It's one of my little secrets that I do. I'll buy some nice slimy clams, sea clams or whatever, and I'll crack them in the shell. I take 2 rocks off the beach usually if I can find them or from my yard. Put them in the sand of the kayak, lay one down. It's got to be flat. Lay the clam in there, crush the whole thing and just drop it over the side. Crush, drop. About every 2 or 3 minutes, crush a new one and send it over. And I'm using a lot of clams, folks. I usually pick up about a 20-pound bag. And then after about 5 or 6 minutes, I'm just sitting on the spot. I haven't even put a line in yet. Hook a big old clam belly up, and I'll fly line that out. Get it to a spot where I like it, and just stop and just let it sit there for a second. If I don't get a hit, I reel it back in, wait, send some more out, and hope for the best. That's one technique that I use a lot. If you're going to use bunker, chunking for bunker, using bunker chum, expect to get a lot of other fish. You're going to get fluke. You're going to get bluefish, sharks, drum this time of year in the bay. So that's a great way if you're just looking for fish and you're just looking to get into fish. Chumming is always an excellent idea. Now, let's say you're going to go out and you want to do it. I want to be artificial all the way. Little difficult during the day this time of year, but you can do it. Most of the time it's an accident, I should say. You're trying for trout, you're trying for the puppy drum, you're trying for a lot of other species, and you incidentally catch a striper. Because the striper's moving through, it's moving to another section, the school moves through, and you hook one, you try to figure out where they're at, and they're gone by then. But great baits to use this time of year. Anything that looks like a mullet. There's a lot of mullet running through the bay, out of the bay, and south, coming from up north and down south. There's a lot of finger mullet in the 4, 5, 6 inch range. So anything that would replicate a finger mullet. There's a lot of gudgeons, mud minnows, killies, that sort of thing, in the water. So those are great imitations. For mullet, one of my favorites is a Rapala walk the dog suspending style bait. It's got a silver sides, a little bit of silver but a white belly, and a black back. I like to cast that out. It's one of my favorite trout lures, too. It's really a killer lure. For soft plastics, hoagies in the pearl color, and any of those colors are great baits. I can't say enough about hoagies. They're just really cool baits. But the hoagies, if you're trying to imitate like a mud minnow, bass assassin, chicken on a chain, you can't do any better than that. In a good imitation style of the what the bait might look like, match that up with any other, you know, jighead that you normally would. The so your other baits, you know, gulp, you know, the usual baits that you would use for trout and redfish and you know, the basic species in Virginia and Maryland and North Carolina all work beautifully this time of year for stripers during the daytime. You know, pompers, you name it, you can use it. Stripers are easy, folks, and I think way too many people overthink the stripe, you know, what striped bass are. Striped bass are feeding machines. They are bluefish without the teeth and the nasty attitude and the ability to procreate like, you know, rabbits. You know, those are the two main differences in striped bass. I mean, they love to feed. They're not as aggressive, but they will feed as heavily as a bluefish will. I grew up in fishing Montauk, folks, and people say, oh, they don't fit. They're not that heavy. Bull tooties. You sit there in Montauk doing a striper blitz, and I swear to God, you will see a striper come out of the water chasing a bunker or pinfish or pogey or sand eel. That sand eel comes out of the water. That striper is behind him going 100 miles an hour, and we're talking not a small striper either, folks. We're talking a 40-pound fish coming fully out of the water, eating that bait, going back down. You can watch that fish eat another bait. That's what we're talking about here, folks. So, fish, these are pretty simple fish. They feed. That's all they're doing this time of year. Crab imitations work great also. They're opportunistic feeders. Now, let's talk about one thing. Stripers like to feed up. Hence, the why eeling is so effective in the wintertime. Why poppers are so effective, why the eel imitation, you know, stick baits work so well. They like to look up and see their bait. Their mouth and their eyes are always up. They're like a tarpon. If you think of a tarpon, the tarpon's mouth kind of rolls up slightly. That's so it can eat stuff on the surface, okay? And that's what's going to happen. That fish is going to come up and wants to eat up top. So think about that when you're doing your bait selection and your presentation. Okay, now let's talk about this time of the year at night. We'll talk about baiting. Same thing as during the daytime, but I am putting baits on the bottom with a float rig. Now, that what you're just saying going is, that makes no sense. What it is a cigar float added to the leader about 4 inches from the bait itself. We're talking a long leader here, at least 18 to 24 inches, okay, fish finder rig kind of setup. So what's going to happen is that bait's going to suspend itself up. That float's going to keep the bait off the bottom, away from the crabs and everything else. And that striper's going to come. It's going to be eye to eye with that bait. Keep staying near the bottom. It's going to hit it. It's going to take off. It's a very effective setup. Send me an email or give me a call. And I'll be more than willing to show you that setup. I know Kevin's probably going to be interested in seeing that. But it's a cool little setup there that I like to use at night. And that's pretty much, you know, next to that. If I'm not in the light line and I'm plugging for stripers, folks, I am using bombers. Bomber long A's this time of the year are deadly for stripers at night. Just walk the beach or if you're fishing, you know, in your local lake, inlet, whatever, a bomber cast toward the shoreline and brought in across some structure, oyster beds, or whatever, is absolutely killer. It is just, you take that bait, you cast it out, as soon as it hits the water, you just start cranking, close your eyes, nice slow cadence, nothing special about it. Maybe every so often, give it a little rod tip a snap to change the staccato a little bit. But at night, keep that reel spinning the same speed. It'll help them find it. Excuse me. All right. Now, if you're fishing the light line, and people ask, what do you mean the light line? What I mean is on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, the James River Bridge, Monitor Merrimack, HRBT, the Bay Bridge up in Maryland. The bridge that's going across, your local road with the little strip of water coming off of Lynn Haven. Anything that has light penetrating the water from dark to light, that line right there is the line. That is a striper hideout. It is a visual structure. It is a spot for the stripers to sit in the dark where they can see everything going by them, but they can't be seen. If you're sitting, just like if you're sitting in the house, you're sitting in your house or you're sitting in a bright area, you can't see what's in the dark area, can you? Or at least not very well. But if you sit in the dark area, you can see everything that's lit up, right? Same idea. All right. Hopefully someone else will run their mall a little bit. We have a unknown caller. Come on, unmute.
It's Hammerhead here, Greg.
Hey,
Couldn't let
Greg.
you have all the fun about stripers.
Yeah, man. You guys are just starting your real striker push up north, aren't they?
It's sort of to the tail end. Our big push around Boston is September. We got a couple more weeks, and it'll be the season will be about over for us. There'll still be some guys out there fishing, but even now we're getting reports that the bite's really starting to slow down up here. So they're on their way down to you guys.
Oh yeah, I know a lot of people are getting geared up and ready to roll already. And it's give it another month and a half, folks, and things really be kicking off for them big ones. Water temp's got to drop a little bit. But Greg, do you have any techniques up there that you use all the time? Simple techniques for people to catch stripers?
Well, the simple technique that pretty much everyone uses up around here, and I don't know exactly how well it would translate to your area, but we up here, most of the guys troll what's known as the tube and worm setup, and it's a piece of surgical tubing. Multitude of colors. Up in the Boston area, the primary color that most people use is red, although everyone has their favorite. I know down in Jamaica Bay, the big color is pink. And you just tip that piece of surgical tubing with a worm, and then you just drag it along, real slowly along the rocks. Normally, when I'm trolling between 1 and 1.5 miles an hour.
Right.
So it's a perfect presentation for a kayak. Motorboats and those guys use them, but unless they have an electric motor on it, they're not getting down that slow.
Right.
And that's my primary, I would say, search bait. As I'm, head out on the water, I'll put that in, right off the launch, and just, anytime I paddle to a new spot, I'll be dragging that around. It's a great way to pick up fish.
Yeah, and it's also easier on your arms because you're not crazy paddling. It's just, reach out, stick the paddle in the water, scoosh,
Yep.
wait a second, you're not, falls to the wall and. Hi, Taylor.
Exactly. So I will I'll use that as my search bait, dragging it anywhere from water that's 5 feet deep. Till this summer I was even dragging it with a little extra weight on the line down to 20 feet
Right.
on some rocks. I found during the striper shootout tournament up here, I found some fish that were pulled up 20 to 25 feet on some rocks, and just slowed it down. I put an inline keel weight in to get it down a little bit deeper, and I think I was moving it 3/4 of a mile an hour. I was just barely making headway, and picked up half a dozen fish that way.
Nice. It's one of my northern secrets that I use down here when I'm searching, and I was going to get the trolling lures a little bit, but folks, it's the simplest thing. If you look at it when it comes to the package, it's a straight piece of surgical tubing with maybe one, two hooks, depending on the length. And all you do is you take the thing and you twirl it up into a coil almost. Let it go, and it's going to straighten itself out a little bit, but it's still going to be coiled up. I use, which I found works really well, and I lose the worms all the damn time. Because we don't have the really good sand worms like we do up north. Is the gulp cut bait in worm, or the gulp blood worm. I just cut that in half and slide that on the trailing hook. And folks, you know, you're in heavy current, or you're sitting in current. You could drop this back and let the current do all the action for you, and still catch fish. This is the great thing about this bait for a kayak. It's a awesome bait that is really underutilized here in Virginia. And in Virginia, if you want to try one of these baits, you're looking at using green or any shade of red, pink, red, bright red, fluorescent red. Red with speckles. I've seen so many. But predominantly, I use red. Red, pink, anything with a red hint to it is killer. Main reason, folks, is why these baits are so killer is that a lot of the fish that are moving up from up north down south, okay, are feeding on what's called sand eels. And sand eels are usually a pink, reddish color. And they hatch and grow and are really accessible when they school up and come near the shore and where the stripers are in the fall. And these fish coming from Maine, from the New England area, Long Island, Jersey, a little bit, have been feeding on these things the whole way down, along with the bunker and everything else. But primarily these are easy meals, and stripers love worms. But they come on down, they get to here. They're not really feeding on them as much, but they still have the natural instinct to eat them. And this is a very good imitation of a sand eel. So that I hope that explains to everyone how this works. So what other baits you got, Greg?
So after that, I would say my second go-to bait would be throwing the Hoagie Plastics. 10-inch, you know, gets you a lot of fish. I just really started using them this summer. Got some tutelage from Eric Harrison there, who's a Hoagie Pro staff, and they even created a jig head just for him this year. And it's a real nice shallow water jig head. With a real big heavy hook on it.
That's a half-ounce one, isn't it?
Yeah, they make a half and three-quarter. And, in fact, the hooks are just absolutely massive on it. And this year, my best this year was 41 inches, and it almost turned that hook, straightened that hook out. I had it hooked in a bad place in the top of its mouth, and dragged itself into some rocks, and I managed to pull it out, but almost straightened that hook too. If it was less of a jig head, I would have had a straight hook and no fish. But those baits are just, I fished them, anywhere from 25 feet deep on submerged rocks, casting them, jigging them along the bottom. For that, I normally use like the Blamber color, which is a real good eel imitation. In a 10 or 13 inch model. All the way to fishing them on the surface. Put a half ounce jig head. My favorite color for that is white, especially when the mackerel were in town and really running and the bass were feeding on that, and just rip it across the top like a popper. And you can let it, you can splash it across the top, and you can let it sink and, you know, walk the dog 6 inches under the surface, a foot under the surface, and you can do this all on the same cast with it, which is the great part. You know, and cover a lot of water with one bait, and, you know, the bass just, you know, absolutely explode on them. So, you know, those are my main two tactics. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll set up in a current or a wind drift, you know, and I'll work the shoreline or submerged structure, whatever I'm fishing, and let the boat drift as I'm casting the hoagies. And then when I get to the end of my drift, you know, say 100, 200 yards, you know, A, I'll either just troll the hoagie back up, which gets, you know, a lot of hits, especially at night, letting it sort of bounce deep along the bottom. Or, you know, once again, I'll toss that tube out back and then troll that back up and then start casting again. Because I'm one of the few guys out here that don't have a Hobie, so they you know, a lot of guys just, you know, they'll find a hole and they can sit there and pedal and just coast, even if the current's moving at 3 miles an hour. They can just hover in one place and cast at structure or wherever they see the fish on their finder.
Oh yeah, and you know, if you're fishing deeper water and you don't have a fish finder, no biggie,
yeah,
but it's a definite, excuse me, it's a definitely a nice thing to have.
But, yeah, it's, you know, even if you never see a fish on it, just being able to find the structure is a huge plus. And then the other thing I just found this year, because I have one of the Hummingbird 385 combo units, which has a built-in GPS, and got a Navionics chip last year, or last winter, to try out. And, you know, all I can say is, oh, my God, you know, I can launch somewhere totally new, never seen it before, and nowhere, you know, maybe not all the super secret holes, but the secret holes, you can be right on them because they're all there, you know, especially for stripers, and I would imagine togs too, that you're looking for the rock piles and stuff. You know, all of these things are hazards, and they're all marked out in the Navionics chips, and you can just, you know, paddle right over to them and boom, you're on fish.
Yeah.
Water, you know, that you've never been on before.
Yeah, and that comes down to, you know, something that I take from my bass fishing experience, and that's doing, if I'm going to a new area, i.e. if I'm going to go fish, you know, the York River, which is up the road from here, then I was going to go ahead and use, you know, the NOAA website, which has some great topography maps and stuff like that. I'm going to research an area. I did that for Jacksonville. We did the boondoggle down there for at least 2 months using Bing Maps and Google Maps, aerial photos, getting, you know, looking online, you know, trying to get everything figured out just for that. So, yeah, I definitely... knowing the structure is key with the stripers. But back to the light line. Two major areas that are great this time of year that are pretty accessible for kayak fishermen are the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel and the HRBT. At night, remember folks, you are a vessel. You need to have a 360-degree light at all times. Visipole is my go-to one. Definitely check that out. So you need a light, headlamp, pretty good so you can see, you know, what's going on, you know, between your legs when you got a fish or you need to retie. But get out there, and think about what they're feeding on. They're feeding on spearing and smaller baits and whatever comes across their face. Flukes, hoagies, topwater poppers, suspending mirror lures, things like that, all great choices. My personally, I go out there, I'm taking four baits. I am taking a bubblegum fluke in the 4-inch size. I am taking a pearl fluke, 4-inch. I am taking a topwater popper, and I'm taking a bucktail with a large curly tail trailer. Usually, if it's white, 9 times out of 10, I'm fishing a white bucktail with a chartreuse, bubblegum, or white trailer, big bulky grub, curly tail trailer. Reason for that is if I'm catching schoolies on top, and if I have my fish finder working, and I can see that there's a larger signature on the bottom, what that is the schoolies are on top feeding, okay? The bigger fish are sitting on the bottom, all right, feeding on the scraps or the stuns, so they don't want to work as hard from the schoolies, okay? So I'll take that big bait, and I'll drop it down the bottom, and I'll jig it for those bigger fish, which is a really good technique, folks. And this night technique works from opening day to opening day next year. Stripers are here 24/7, 365 in Virginia. So, at night, you can 9 times out of 10, if they're around, you can find them. Nighttime fishing this time of year is my personal favorite. They pile up really tight in these light lines, and it's just one after the other after the other after you find them. Now, if it's getting kind of difficult, you just can't seem to find them, okay? Look around you. Don't just focus on the water. Look around you. I have found more scattered schools of stripers moving around by using the birds. If I see birds, and these are seagulls, any kind of bird, I see a group of them, and they're just flying around in the spot, and then they come down, they kind of scoop stuff up. I'm going to head over there, I'm going to make a couple casts. That could be scraps from when they were just feeding and it's rising to the surface. That could be, some guy driving across the bridge and threw his crackers out. You just never know, but that's where I'm going to look. Tall tale sign that the striper's feeding is birds are diving into the water, and there's splashes where there's no birds. Pretty much that's where the stripers are. What is that chip? So, nighttime is my personal time for stripers. Now we're moving on to late season. This is the hint, hint, wink, wink for someone to call in. And this is when I changed my whole thoughts about it. About fishing for stripers. I'm slowing down. I'm using larger baits, so we have a larger fish species, a larger size of fish coming in. The fish coming in, sorry folks, if I stop for a second and I just kind of like zone out, I'm actually reading, catch myself up on the chat room. The larger fish come in, so we're changing tactics. We're using larger baits. We're using eels this time of year, because that's what they're primarily feeding on, because the eels are moving out of the bay and the tributaries out to their spawning grounds in the Sargasso Sea. But we have a very special guest here, calling from Norfolk, Virginia. It is Kayak Kevin Whitley. What's going on, man?
Yo, man.
What's going on, brother?
Nothing. Just working on DVD. Wish I should have went out tonight, but getting DVD done, so getting stuff done. You're talking about the light line. Now, my favorite thing at the light line is a dark colored jerk shad with just a bare hook. I like to use a bait, like a 7-aught bait holder hook, and that's all I use for the light line. It keeps it right on top. I can see it. If it, you know, I can let it drop. Sometimes I will use those little weedless hooks with the 8-ounce weights on it if the current's run a little bit stronger, or, you know, adjust that up. But that's my favorite thing there. Any kind of really dark, or even maybe a dark color, you know, soft plastic body with a glitter on it, a little bit of sparkle, works really good too. It's the silhouette factor out there.
Right. Yeah, you know, I guess that kind of comes from me being stubborn. I like my bubble gum.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's either light or dark when they're looking up into the light. It's, you know, as long as it's opaque and they can't see through it, then they're going to see it.
Right.
And one thing, and they, what's that?
I said that makes sense.
Yeah. And another thing is, like, when you see them in the light line, now, this is for other people who still don't know, you know, understand what the light line is. It's the light from the bridge light shining down the water, and the bridge shadow creates the structure or the ambush point. So the way we get into the fish are lined up facing into the current in the shadow with their nose right up against where that light and shadow part is, that line, that's the light line. And we get up behind them and can sight cast to them. And it's a whole sight cast fishery. It's a pick your target, shoot at that fish, and you can get them. Now, what's funny about it is you have to put action on it. You can't just throw it out in front of them and have, you know, your bait slide right past them. As long as they'll look at it, but they won't do anything to it. But if you get it right in front of their, right in their range, and give it one little twitch, two little twitches, they attack it. And that's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah. Favorite time of the year, man. Favorite time of the year. Sight cast for them. That's great. We have area code.
That's
804.
Pretty much all year long.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
Area code 804. You're on the air.
Hey, man. It's Rob Troy, dude.
What's going on, Rob? Mr. Lightline
up,
himself.
Y'all start talking about it, so I figure I might as well call in.
Yep.
Cool, man.
But I think, like Kevin said, I think I like the dark, too, the darker color. But, I mean, it depends on the night. Sometimes if it's a brighter night, like if there's more, you know, more moonlight or something like that, I might go to a light. I'll just go back and forth. And also, I think the size has a lot to do with it.
Depending on the bait is real small.
Yeah, if it's, because sometimes, yeah, sometimes if it's really small stuff, anytime you throw anything more than 3 inches big, they freak out. They don't want it, you know. And then they drop down in the column. But and those nights, you know, I just cut up gulp and I just make it real small, and it still works. Just gotta make it small, you know.
Oh yeah, even what they want, match the hatch.
Yep. Hey Rob, we're not talking about light line, but striper in general. What would be your one go to bait if you only had, you know, I got one bag of bait, and that's the only, you know, the only kind of bait that I have. What would be your go-to bait for schoolie stripers?
I've had real good luck with the storms overall. You know, the 4-inch, I think it's 4-inch. The storm is just like a swim bait.
Yeah, you know, that's mine too.
Natural color or natural pattern on it, and I don't know.
Yep, that's mine too. The 20-inchers will huff a 4-inch swim bait down so fast they can almost gut hook them, and you're, you know, you're striking them as fast as you can, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's mine too. That is the go-to. I mean, down on the bottom, let it sink down. Schoolies, you know, blitzing somewhere, throwing them against the rocks. I mean, in every situation, a swim shad is going to work for a striper.
Yeah, you could, because you could work it fast and you could work it slow. Either way, it's going to work, depending on what they want.
Yeah, of course, blues get it, and you got to retie every time, but.
Yeah, if the blues show up, I usually put that, because they're a little more fun. I'll switch over to, you know, a bag of the cheaper plastics, which usually is that the blues are out, stuff is going crazy, and they're going to eat anything anyway, so.
That's when I just leave.
I hate treble hooks, though, man. That's the one thing, I mean, with anything, treble hooks in the kayak just irk me. I don't like that, especially if there's glue in the water.
I've had one incident when I was a while back. I had a blue, you know, on a Yuzuri crankbait, and it jumped out and caught me in the sleeve. You know, not in my skin, but in my sleeve. So it's treble hook and a bluefish thrashing around. That was my. That was like, okay, clipping all my treble hooks from here on out.
Yeah, I've had several friends get hooks right through their flesh, man. I mean,
we have one friend that gets them.
She got a whole bunch of them. Over and over. Every other report, he was just showing some picture of, his hand with, like, two different treble hooks. I hit a bone. I had my friend Billy.
Yeah,
it was way in there. He was messing with trout, though. My friend Justin came up with some. The thing about the light line is, if they're thick, if they're really like aggressive and hungry, you can throw basically anything, and as long as it's
going the right speed,
they're gonna eat it. And
so a shooting string on a hook.
Socks or anything. I've had empty jig heads, and they hit it.
Justin and his Mr. Woody boy.
Woody toy.
Yep.
Yeah, he made a little hot rod. He made one out of a matchbox car for me, and I tried it. It sank really fast, so I just skimmed it across the surface, and I heard it. You know the difference when you hear splashing in the water. You can tell it's blue, and you can tell when it's a striper, because a striper, you can almost hear like the sucking noise.
Yeah,
you know,
striper's a pop, bluefish is a slash.
Yeah. And so I heard a couple of those, so I might have had some going after my matchbox car, but I didn't get any hookups. I'll have to try again next time.
But moving on to the wintertime and when we eel, and I've asked Kayak Kevin to come on because he is the man knows more than I do about eeling for stripers in the winter time. Kevin, I'm going to let you take center stage here. Break it down for us. If someone who's just starting off doesn't know anything, just has a rod and a reel, and 50-pound braid, because that's all that they run with. Where would you go from there?
Well, what's great about the fishery that we have over at the Gifted Peak and the concrete ships is that probably the easiest place in the kayak fishing world to catch a trophy striper. I mean, the structure is 200 yards off the shore. It's fairly protected, and it's so easy. There's nowhere else in our East Coast that you could catch. You have the potential to catch 60 pounders from your kayak and making it that easy. The eeling technique came from the ship eeling technique came from the boaters when they used to eel at the high rise, which is the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel down by Fisherman's Island. The high rise section of it, they used to drop, just basically Carolina rigs with eels down to the bottom and three cranks up and just stick it in the eddies of the piling. Well, we used to do that before we found them at the concrete ships, and that was a nightmare. The current runs 4 knots there sometimes, and while you're in the middle of the current, it's safely in the back of this eddy. I didn't want to catch a fish. I didn't want to get pulled out of that eddy because I don't have a pound pack into it. So that was always a really sketchy place. Luckily, we kind of haphazardly found them at the ships, and that the rest is history, I guess, after that point. But the technique is really easy. One rod. You don't take multiple rods, just one rod. Just a boat rod, basically, what you can use is something you can hold on to them, something you can stay close to them. It's basically a boat rod. I use 50-pound braid and 80-pound leader, and I wouldn't use anything under 60. I've seen them wear through 50-pound leader at the side of the boat, and 60 to 80-pound leader is going to be good on your hands when you're leadering the fish right next to the boat. That's the main reason to have that thick leader. And so you'll need fluorocarbon. Yeah, you can use that there. It's a nighttime fishing for most part, and they're pretty aggressive. But at the ships, one rod, Carolina rig, I use about 2 to 4 ounces, depends on the current. talking about a foot and a half, 2 foot of 80-pound leader, and a 10-aught owner cutting point hook, and with the eel, you know, stuck through the face. Drop it down to the bottom, crank it up about three feet. You want that eel to be 3 foot off the bottom, roughly, around that structure. And we just put it in free spool, you know, tighten your tension so the eel's not going to drop down to the bottom, and wait for the stripers to come by. That's
clicker,
up against the ship's technique. With the clicker on, yes. Yep. Yep.
So what happens when the fish eats the bait? Is he going to take off like a bat out of heck, or is it going to be like, ooh, I'm watching my line just kind of like moving, and it shouldn't be moving like that is, or is it a one little pull, and, you know, well, what should you expect when the striper hits?
It's usually they don't take off running. Even though they'll be in schools, for the most part, they don't take off running. It's a zip-zip, and what you got to kind of, you know, what you get used to out there is your eel going crazy, which your tip of your rod will just bounce, and then the striper grabbing it, which it'll just go zip-zip, pull about, you know, 2 inches of line out each time, which is the eel going in the striper's mouth and him shutting his mouth on it, and that's the zip-zip. And sometimes it might move away or you know, just slightly move, but that's all you need. The fish has the eel in its mouth, and you can set the hook at that point. You don't have to wait. You don't have to feed it. Fish is not walking, you know, swimming around with worm hanging out of his mouth. The other fish are going to try to grab it, so he's got it in his mouth. You just set the hook at that point. Usually, away from the structure, away from the ships itself, they'll take off with it a little bit faster. It seems like when they're right up against the ships, they don't run right off the bat.
Right. So you heard the zip-zip, you crank down, you set the hook, you know, you start paddling away, the fish starts taking off. How would you, you know, you fought the fish and you're fighting them. You know, I know that you've kind of, I guess, patented the leg kick in. You know, break it down for the listeners who haven't fished, you know, have only caught spot. You know, how to properly get, you know, a big fish like this in the boat, you know, their first time out. And, of course, they should never go out alone their first night, you know, out to the ships. Just saying.
Well, one, here's a good shameless plug to get my videos, because the shows, we land a bunch of big fish with our legs, and that's all we use. We don't use nets. We don't use lip grippers, any of that stuff. And you can see the fluidity of that move in my videos. So that's one thing. So kayakkevin.com videos. And now the fight itself, you want to stay with the fish. There's the openings of the ships. There's a lot of structure around there, and you don't want that fish just to get away from you. And, you know, the way we fish it out there, we're not tethered to anything. We're not anchored off. And as soon as the fish hits, you just want to tighten up on them and stay with them. The scary part is, or the sketchy part is, when they go in between the ships, what we call the alley of the ships, either the two bows of each ship or two sterns. If he gets away from you and goes around the corner and you feel like you're on structure, you really want to stay with him and have him pull you straight through. That's the optimal thing. But if you feel your line on the structure, put it in free spool, put the rod down, and paddle through. Because you got a 50% chance of the fish coming off, but he's definitely going to come off if you just keep that tension on that line. So you paddle through and then reel up and regain, see if he's there. And usually they will. Once they don't have any tension on them anymore, they quit fighting. And they'll just kind of sit there. But when you get him up to the boat and it's all good and you get him up and he's splashing you and then you're getting ready to land him, what I do is I fight everything on my left-hand side. So I bring the fish up beside. I put my leg in the water, my left leg in the water, bring the fish towards me. Take the leader with my left hand to do a leader wrap, so I got a pretty decent grip on the fish. Bring him between my leg and the boat, put the rod down, put it in a free spool if I can. Reach down with my right hand, lift the fish with my right hand, and pull with my hand on his lip, my left hand on the leader, and cradle him and kind of pull him up with my leg, and boom, he's in the boat. And, you know, people always who are novice at kayak fishing, well, how do you get these big fish in the boat? All you got to do is get him up 3 inches and he's in. And it's not a real big feat to try to, it's not anything heavy. All you got to do is just lean a little bit, boom, and you got all three things grabbing onto him. It's pretty fairly easy to get in. some of those 48 inches, you might want to use two hands.
It's yeah. really, by the time you get it, like, get most of his head and, like, half of his body up, all you got to do is, like, lift, like, just push the leg up and the rest of it.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's really easy once you get the first half of him in, you know.
He's in.
Yeah, you're using your leg almost like a ramp. Getting him
yep.
almost, you know, moving towards you, and then you just kind of just bring your leg in like you normally would, and it comes
swapping in. And then, like,
in.
Yeah, just a little bit of lift, a little bit of lift at the end, and he's right on in.
Yep. All right, we got another caller, area code 714.
Hello.
Hello.
It's me, Mark. It's Rob.
Hey, Rob. Good call.
What's up?
What's up, Rob?
What's up, Rob?
Boondoggle Eve, man. I'm, like, excited.
Cool,
just like Christmas Eve, man. It's better than Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I would be excited, too, if I were you.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing, man?
That's all right, Rob Troy. We're going to get him to come up. We're going to get him to have a boondoggle up here. They can't
yeah.
grab you.
Please, man.
I'll do it, man. I'll do it. That sounds awesome. Sounds like
dude.
A blast.
Hey, you got, and it's perfect for Rob because he's got his Norfolk Internationals right down the street, so, and Williamsburg International, so, two choices.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
That's going to be easy. It's going to be easy.
Yeah.
That's right down the road, man, so that makes it easy. Cool. Yep, so we're getting a pretty good lobby for the Mid-Atlantic there, man. That's pretty good. Excited about that.
Yeah.
How you guys doing, man?
Doing good.
Talking fishing.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, we're going to keep on rolling. I know, yeah, there goes Rob. With that, do you guys do it? Kevin, do you do any eeling, floating an eel, or anything else away from the ships?
Yeah, that's a whole other technique out there. What time we got? We got 9 o'clock. That out there, we do two rods. We do one, the same rod that we use around the ships. We put that one down about 15 foot. Even though there's an 80-foot slough out there, we only put it down 15 foot, like you were saying before. Stripers like their feet looking up. So that's what they pretty much key off on. Even though you might mark them on your fish finder really deep, just put it 15 foot down because they'll come up to it. And the other rod, which is the more fun rod to use, is the free line eel rod. You just take an eel, no weight, you know, same rate, just take the weight off of it, and just hook it out there. And, you know, let them land, let them swim down, slowly reel them up, throw them out again. But 8 times out of 10, that rod gets hit first, and that's a lot of fun because that one, they take off with it. They take off screaming
yeah.
with it, and you can keep.
That's what happened to me last time. The first time I went on that drift, man, it was I had a relatively light line rod, and I threw that thing out there, and, like, you know, it was not even halfway to the boat, and it just started flying, dude. It was definitely a different kind of bite, very different kind of
yeah.
bite. What when you're on that drift, fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's way more fun because you got that no structure, no, you know, that's a relief, just being out there in the open. And the potential to get doubles out there. One of the first years we were fishing that area, you know, I think Lee and I caught a dozen each out there on the drift. And, you know, it started out in the beginning of the day of, like, I got one on. Oh, my other rod's going off. Here, grab this one. All right, I'll paddle over to you. And, you know, it started out like that towards the middle and the end of the day. You know, we were both having doubles. You know, it was like, you know, hey, come get this rod, man. I got my own problems over here. You got that one. We were literally bailing 40 inches. You know, all right, got one up, all right, next one. It was crazy, you know. So that potential is there out there, and that'll wear your thumbs out.
Yeah. But nothing feels better than the next day.
I trolled the yield a little bit. Huh? I was trolling a couple on the way back to the ships, too, and I had a couple hits off of there, too. I should have had heavier line then because they both broke off, but I don't know, that's probably another way if you wanted to move instead of just going along the drift. Or the thing is about
well,
the drift, if you're going to be heading one way and then you want to come back the other way too when you're coming back, you got to eventually come back. So,
well, that's how I got my 52-pounder.
So there you go.
Yep. We were only there for a half a day. I had to come back for work. We were out at buoy 18, which is the drift area, and I had weighted rods, and I just put them back, just threw them back there, and they were basically on top. And the 52 pounder came up and crashed it, basically pretty much on top. And yeah, yep. So always when you're away from the ships, moving anywhere, just leave an eel out, because they'll come up and smack it right there, right at your boat.
Definitely. Nothing. Ah, man, I'm so excited. So excited. Oh,
yeah, man, we still got like 2 months before that, man. We still got Tog and everything else.
Yeah, Tog and Trout.
Quit talking about
the ships real quick, though. I mean, Kevin kind of told me this at a different seminar. Like, if you're over there taking pictures of one of your friend's fish, too, once his is up, you should drop yours in. Drop your eel down, because a lot of times, like, Kevin did that to me twice, I think. I was taking a picture of mine, and as soon as he put it down, like, he was just taking a picture, next thing you know, his rod's going off.
See, that's a Lee move. That's a Lee move. He's constantly doing that. And the problem is, he'll put it down before he's finishing taking pictures, so as soon as he gets a hit, the camera drops. I'm like, man, I'm not done yet. Take this picture, and he's gone. You know, he's just gone off to the horizon, man. So I'll reel that line up. All right, take my pictures. All right, now I put that line down. he'll sneak an eel down on you and forget about you.
Oh, man. Even though it is, a month, 2 months away, the temp keeps on dropping like it is, and these stripers keep on moving in, I just cannot wait, man.
No. Okay, well, if you got a couple more minutes, there's another situation with these fish. Now, these are migrating fish. So, these are the fish that are up in New York and up in Hammerhead's area, Greg's area, and so... We have those fish coming down. We also have the bay migration coming down. And on optimal years, they come down together, and we just have a million fish down here. That usually coincides with the cold front. So this fishery is all cold front related, all weather related, all water temperature related. The optimal temperature is 47, 48 degrees. The cutoff is 42 degrees. So always, if anybody's out of town trying to come up here, look at these water temperatures, look at my website, look on the buoy report to see what those water temperatures are. If it goes below 42, they will shut off. Not saying they move out. Depends on the length of that cold front or how long that water is going to come down. If it hits 42, they shut off. If it comes back up 45, 46, it's not going to turn on immediately. It will happen 24 hours after that. It will come up to 46, level off to 46. Got it the next night, they will be on. That's been pretty much proven to us a bunch of times, so we can kind of forecast that. So, but if it stays 42 for a really long time, they're going to be out in the ocean. They're going to be away from our spot. And there's many variables, how many cold fronts come through, how heavy the cold fronts come through. Around Thanksgiving, if we get a really strong cold front and it drops the temperature down, all the fish will come down in one big group. If there's smaller cold fronts that just kind of trickle the temperatures down, we'll get the scouts, which will get some smaller 42s, 43-inch fish that'll come down before the big, massive, big 50 to 60-pound fish. So all of that really has to come in play. You really have to just kind of have to be here. I mean, it's a tough one to forecast for people wanting to come in from out of town to do it long-term, because it's really tough. It's weather-related, and that's the problem with the whole thing. But when you're here, when it's on, it's incredible and a lot of fun.
Yeah. And so for anyone of these that was trying to get an idea, pretty much from mid-November till the season ends for us, and you're trying to keep them, you're looking at mid-November to the first of the year. So
right.
In that time frame, you can pretty much find
them. In previous years, we've, on the nice warm seasons, we've had them in the bay into February. And what's great about that time of year is there's no boaters out there messing with them, because they can't kill any. They can only go out to the ocean. So it pretty much leaves it all to ourselves, and that's probably the best time we've ever had on, is during January. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't keep them, but you can fish for them, and that's a lot of fun.
You can catch and release, and you can register citations. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Although, that's been a good long time ago. It's been 4 years ago at this point that it's been. We've had that.
Right. Fingers crossed.
I only hope. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But, all right. I think that covers the all stripers, you know, pretty much in depth or as simple as possible to help get you started. For those, you know, that are starting to get into it. You guys have anything else, you know, fishing this time, you know, right now, or, you know, anything you guys want to add from the Buzzard Throw? Anybody?
No.
Bueller. The Malt Licky? Anyone have any Malt Licky? All right.
Oh yeah, somebody we gotta. Who has not seen Skippy? Skippy goes fishing. just Google, you know, search that on YouTube, and it's hilarious. That's all I gotta say about that stuff. That stuff's great. Yeah.
What was it?
Heavy. It's YouTube.
Skippy goes fishing.
Yeah, Skippy goes fishing. It is.
Skippy goes fishing or something. Fishing with Skippy. That's what it is. Fishing with Skippy.
Just thinking about it.
I know, and you can't, you know, it's hard to explain without going, like, giving it all away. You just gotta watch it, and then mumbles and all that stuff. This guy does a bunch of characters. It's great. Good stuff.
Yeah. Ed Bassmaster. Yeah. He's funny. I'm still trying to figure out a way, probably at ICAST this year, because he goes down to ICAST with Topwater Apparel. You know, trying to get him and Mo Bass together. Mumbles and Mo Bass.
Oh, man, that one. Oh, please have the cameras rolling on that. Got to have the cameras rolling on that one. Lord. Yeah.
That would... they'd get... After that, they'd get their own TV show, man. And then...
Yeah. Mo Bass
anyway.
Skippy Show.
Hey, y'all, this is Mo Bass. My buddy here, Mumbles. We're going all the Mumbles and Malt Licky.
Nobody knows what we're talking about.
No. And, you know, by next, and you know what it's going to be? People are going to listen to the podcast, look this stuff up. Next week, I'm going to have people calling in going, you know, have you
seen Mumbles,
have you seen my new fish finder? Oh man. So with that, folks, we're gonna call it a night. So I'm gonna do my shameless plugs. I'm gonna start off with the people that are in the chat room. So we're gonna start from the bottom up with Mr. Rob Choi's website, angling-addict.com. Really great site. I really didn't notice the video in there. Came up in the Yak Angler website the other day. It's a great video. It's a really, really good, very well done video. Definitely check out angling-addict.com. Plus, he's a substandard writer, but we let him go with that. Kidding, Rob.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, man. Folks, like I said, it's a very well done website. He's actually a very, very good writer, and after seeing that video, a very good production editing guy for the video. So
the new video, Rob?
No, that's the one from last year. They were just talking about some GoPro stuff, and I just wanted to throw it up so they can see what the old one used to look like. But the new one's gonna be good, hopefully.
Cool.
Yep. And then next in line is, you know him, you love him, KayakKevin.com. Yeah, folks, I'm one of these guys, I never click on links, and I was at Oceans East 2, where Kevin works, and he showed me all of his links he has, and like an idiot, I was like, I didn't know you had that on there, and I'm always on his website, because I can never remember the striper techniques or reading his reports, and I was like, you know, you got everything here, man. You got wins, three different sites for wind, one for tides, and black tie. Oh, really? So definitely check out his website.
My links page is what I use to fish where I fish. I mean, it's what I go to check out and, you know, get my forecast. So it's basically my favorite page right there on my website.
Yeah, it's always well done stuff there, and just another great blog to go to.
Let me plug something for the Striper season too. Is Kip the Peak State Park? They got great lodging there during the winter, and it puts you right there, right at the fishery, and that's fishing home base right there during that time of year. Just go to my website and you'll find the links to Kip the Peak State Park there.
There you go. Some place to stay instead of paying the $18 toll back and forth every day.
Yep, it'll save you money staying over there.
Yeah. And then, Greg, I apologize. I just had a brain fart. Your blog is what?
My blog is yakfish.net.
Yakfish.net. I was going to say yakfish.com, but I knew that wasn't right. Just wanted to double check to make sure. Another great blog, folks. Northern Reaches. We're talking Boston, New Hampshire, stuff like that. Another very well done blog. Very well written. Definitely check out yakfish.net. All right. I am the only one in Buzzards Row without a website yet, so I'm going to plug my people I support along with the guys we just mentioned. Yakangler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource. Definitely check that out. IrishWaterDogs.com. Keen Footwear. Check them out. Check out yakdaddy.net, home of the slider. Hoagie Baits. Jiminy Christmas Trees. I got so many. Support these people, folks. Release Reels. Jesus, almost forgot about those guys. Folks.
Yeah, they contacted me, too, talk about the rods. So that's if I can put some input on those rods, that would be really cool because they're going to put some rods out. Good stuff for kayakers here locally. Sure.
Yeah, Virginia, so it's definitely something good to support.
Yeah, everything that they do is made in America. So definitely support these guys. I'm hoping to have Wes on the show next Wednesday, if not the Wednesday after. So me and him talked during the TKA tournament for a good 45 minutes, man.
Yeah. He's a real nice guy, man. Real nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
Real cool.
So definitely check out Release Reels. They're just starting up, but I think they're going to go very far with their gear. And I think that is it. Remember, folks, Kayak Fishing Radio, 24/7. Listen to any of the podcasts. Good luck to everyone going out in the boondiggle, down in Charleston, South Carolina. They'll be fishing the Copahee Sound area. So, want to hear reports about that. And I think that's about it, folks. Remember, always wear your PFD. Always take a kid fishing if you can. And respect the resource. We only have one. Got to respect it. All right, folks. With that, I am out. Have a great weekend. Hope you all catch some fish. And tight lines. Later, everybody.
Later
on.
Night.